So, well, I've written this presentation for the restoration and cleaning business. And what I'd like you to leave today knowing is I want you to understand the major risk and insurance issues relating to your business. I actually teach risk management at the University of Wisconsin about the third year. And I understand the insurance coverage on your firm. I want you to understand yours. I'll leave you here knowing how to avoid the most common mistakes in insurance programs designs for restoration firms. Your insurance needs more closely resemble a nuclear bomb plant cleanup contractor than a flower shop. Right? You have very special insurance needs. And you'll hear enough about it here that you'll have a pretty good idea how to manage risks in your business. Most of your owners, you have to manage your own risks. So American Risk Management Resources Network is a wholesale insurance broker. We work with local insurance agents. We're an insurance agent's insurance agent. Insurance agents will go to wholesale brokers when they have to deal with things that they don't normally run into, like directors and officers, liability, lawyers, professional, things that are just unusual. We design and sell specialty insurance policies for the cleaning and restoration business. That's one of the things we do. And I've been on the IICRC Board of Directors. That's where I learned a lot about your business. Larry Cooper helped me write the mold cleanup standards, which I needed the standards so I could invent mold insurance, which I did. And then I'm the world's most expensive expert witness in environmental insurance, $700 million of litigated coverage. So when I say, I don't understand what that says, other people don't understand it either. That's why it was in litigation. So you don't want to have a risk management program that involves litigation before you can collect under an insurance policy. Because one of the common denominators in all of that is, before I get the call, the lawyers have been screwing around with that thing for 5 years. I've never gotten one that was less than 5 years. One of them, they'd spent $3 million before they called me. And that was just on my side of the case. So when I talk about an insurance program design, it's an insurance program design that doesn't get you there. The major risks and insurance issues in your business. These are kind of the things where you face risk. Damage to your own property, damage to the property of others. If you damage property of others, there's going to be some liability. Causing bodily injury to others or your employees, that's the expensive stuff. Assuming risks in contracts, that is the rocket science of the risk management business. You are relatively small contractors. The people that you would normally deal with would not be experts at managing risks in contracts. I just reviewed 15 insurance policies for one of the networks that hires a bunch of you guys. 15 out of 15 did not meet spec. Doesn't meet spec, guess what? You're not covered and you're still indemnifying them. You just don't have insurance behind them. 15 out of 15. And that was a random sample. It wasn't because they thought they were in trouble. It was just, send me 15 and let's see how they're doing. Almost all the risks that you face can be insured. You're a pretty simple business. You're not doing weird things. Buying insurance is a waste of money for some risks. What kind of insurance agent's telling you you're wasting your money? I'll explain why that is. And defective insurance coverage on your business is not a good deal. Policy that excludes everything you do for a living. Not a good deal. You can actually get a master's degree in this. I have a master's degree from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. University of Wisconsin-Madison, master's degree in insurance. University of Wisconsin-Madison is ranked number one, two, or three in the United States for the last 20, 30 years in insurance, and I graduated top of my class and bottom at the same time. 42,000 students, one thought it was a good idea to get a master's degree in insurance. It was very unusual educational credentials. But you can actually get a master's degree in this. That's it. That's what I learned. Never risk a lot for a little. Never risk more than you can afford to lose. And consider the odds. All the decisions you make, what businesses you take on, what contracts you enter into, just keep that in mind. A little three-step process. So some examples of that. Never risk a lot for a little. Insurance premiums are small relative to the limits of liability, but can still be a waste of time, a waste of money. Never risk more than you can afford to lose. The reality is your business. If you're most like small businesses, like I'm a small business, I own my company. The reality is my business is my biggest asset. I'm not going to risk my business for a little money. I'm probably not going to risk my business for a lot of money. And then consider the odds. Here's something you never knew about insurance. Insurance pays out about half the money you pay in as claims. Only half of it goes to pay claims. The rest is taken up in transaction costs, overhead, and profits at the insurance company. Your insurance agent makes about 18% of the premium. So if you're paying $10,000 in premium, your agent's making about $1,800. Insurance company's overhead takes up about 23% of premiums, and losses account for the half. So if you're going to pay for a loss, something bad that happens through the insurance mechanism, you'll pay for it twice for you. On average, you'll pay for it twice if you buy insurance to cover it. So it's always amazing to me what people buy insurance on. So I go into Harbor Tools because I need a hammer drill. Because I've got a drill 16 holes in concrete, and I just don't want to screw around with a regular drill. I won't use that drill again for the next 5 years, most likely. So I buy the cheapest hammer drill I can. $29. For $3, they'll send me sell me a warranty on the thing. Maybe it's five. $5 divided by 30 is a crazy rate for insurance. That's just insane. Why would I do that? But people buy that stuff all the time. Why is it when you go to Best Buy that they always offer you that insurance, right? Well, the salesperson, half their take-home pay is from that. It's just a bad habit. And I never insure what I can afford to pay for. General rule. Never insure what you can afford to pay for because you don't have to pay for it twice. Unless you're smarter than the insurance company and can game them, and buy insurance that pays out more in claims than the premiums paid. It is highly unlikely you are that smart. They have really good information on how the game is played. My liability insurance, you know, how much insurance should you have? Never seen an objective benchmark on that. Here's a good way to do that. Take your profits before interest and taxes. Add back in your salary to that number. Multiply that number times 5 and insure your business to that number. It's a rational way to do it. No one can just do it.
Take $10,000 insurance. You profit taxes in the way that you
okay, if you had a $10,000 profit, and let's say you were taking $50,000 out of the firm a year, that's $25 an hour. Now you're 60 times 5, $300,000 in insurance. Okay. Just in general, always have an umbrella. Personal? Yes?
Usually you're buying your general liability to meet the requirements of the companies you're working
with. Right, or they won't let you work less than a million.
Well, yeah, they're going to weigh it down to bigger the company.
Two or three, yeah, the insurance companies are pretty conservative in that. $1 million or $2 million umbrellas. Saw one of those, like Crawford's $1 million. You go work for Ford Motor Company, they'll ask you for $15 million in insurance. The sole purpose of that is to make sure that little firms don't go running around in a Ford plant.
Can you talk a little bit about umbrella policies if you get a chance?
Okay. Covered umbrella. I think I have a slide for it, so I won't start on it. So I don't think you can beat the house in the long run. The insurance companies have all the information. If you think insurance is a bad deal and you're not buying it because you don't have the risk, chances are you're not evaluating it. The insurance companies are not making money for the last couple of years and they're trying to increase rates. So they're not charging enough. That means you're getting more bang for your buck. You're still paying a little less than twice for covered losses, though. I recommend using aggressive self-insured retentions and deductibles to lower insurance costs, especially in your business. So the restoration firms specifically have a very limited insurance marketplace that can actually insure them and do a decent job. There's 2,400 insurance companies in the United States. There are 10, maybe, that do a decent job in a restoration firm. If you only got 10 insurance companies to go with, you need to be paying attention to how you're treating those 10. And one of the things that an underwriter will look at is if a firm is using their liability insurance like a piggy bank and telling their customers, you know, if you don't like it, you turn in a claim to my insurance company and they'll handle it. You get three of them at $500, neither of those 10 insurance companies won't insure you for any amount of money, right? If you get one claim for $1 million, the insurance companies will lower your rate and your annuity. I've actually seen that. You only have $1 million claim to ignore. Three little ones, you're uninsurable. Some of the insurance companies, unwritten rule, is upon the report of the first claim, they won't renew you. I think that's a crazy strategy. Whatever the, from an underwriter's perspective, whatever that contractor did to turn in that claim, that contractor is the least likely person on the planet to do that again. Got them sued. They're not going to do that again. They might do something else. They won't do that. But some of the carriers, first reporting their claim to your shop. Kind of important to know that before you buy all their policies. But use aggressive self-insured retentions and deductibles. It lowers your premium, and in reality, you can't be turning in those little claims anyhow.
What are self-insured retentions?
It's like a deductible, but you're paying. The deductible, the insurance company pays, and you pay them. Self-insured retention, you're on your own up till that amount, and then the insurance company clicks it. Deductibles are much preferable for a small contractor since you're not sitting there with a legal department that knows exactly what to do for the first $5,000. Deductibles are the way to go. A typical insurance program on a restoration firm, you're going to have a property insurance policy. Sometimes it's on a package. Property insurance insures the property that you own, your office or shop equipment, your contractor's equipment. That'll be on a different policy usually than the policy that insures your own property and stuff that moves around. Bailey's coverage. Got a lot of holes in this. Crawford and Crawford kind of drove Bailey's coverage into the industry by requiring $250,000 of it. I've actually talked to contractors that took contents, supplies to cleaners too, took other people's contents to their shop to clean them. You're responsible for that stuff in your shop, and your property policy doesn't cover it. It's actually specifically excluded. So you need insurance on the stuff of others that you take into your shop to clean.
That's called Bailey's?
Bailey's Insurance. And it is a form of care custody control. I talked to a guy in Florida that has $6 million worth of other people's property in his shop. He had no insurance on it. Woohoo! liability insurance. So you all buy a commercial general liability insurance policy. Quick thing from a flower shop to a nuclear bomb plant buys one of those. It's a standard policy. They're all the same. And then you buy an auto liability policy. You buy an auto liability policy because the general liability policy's got a exclusion for the maintenance, use, and operation of automobiles. Also excludes damage to your workers, so you buy a kind of policy. excludes fungus, bacteria, pollution, all liquid contaminants, irritants, contaminants. The fix-it for that exclusion is some form of environmental insurance. According to Devin Kessler, there's 16,000 restoration firms in the United States. I think maybe 2,000 of them have some form of pollution insurance. Of those, 1,000 of them are fundamentally flawed. 14,000 people run around without insurance for what they do for a living. Weird. Just weird. Avoiding the most common mistakes in property insurance. We see this in our client base. Just maintain an accurate inventory of owned and leased property that you are financially responsible for. QuickBooks does a good job of it. If you've got a CPA, somebody help you with your taxes, they'll keep it pretty straight on the property. You need to give that schedule to your insurance agent to make sure I got coverage for this. It comes off your financials. Maintain an accurate inventory of your equipment for the same reason. Property insurance policies say that you've got coverage for this, and there's a list of stuff. If it's not on the list, you don't have insurance. Sometimes there's some blanket stuff. Your inventories are fluctuating, but for you guys, you shouldn't have a whole bunch of that going on. Equipment list, kind of know what properties you're in. Just make sure that that is maintained. Don't assume the agent's doing it. Just a month ago, an agent sells a three-year policy. It's a big company. It had 60 locations. They told me the company had grown, and they were a little nervous about environmental insurance, so would I handle the account? So they made me the broker on the thing. We're going into renewal at the end of the third year, and they've gone from 60 to 180 locations over the course of 3 years. How many locations were on this policy going 30 days into the renewal? 63. Wow. Just, I don't know what the agent was doing, I don't know what the client was doing, but they just didn't have their sites insured.
If you have an LLC and the equipment is not listed under the LLC, it's still covered?
The question is, if you have an LLC and the equipment is not part of the LLC, can you insure it? You can insure it if you have an insurable interest. Right. And so just if there's a policy that says that equipment is insured, then that's the named insured that the insurance company has to pay when there's a loss. So it's very common to find folks underinsured on their property. Bankers kind of keep you straight on that. If you borrow money, they want to see that stuff insured. But generally, property insurance policies provide adequate insurance off the shelf. I think it's impossible to buy a property insurance policy that fundamentally does not insure the property that you want insured. It means liability policies are different. It's actually impossible to buy a policy that doesn't work at all. So liability is a lot riskier than property loss exposures. It's just a lot more variable. Get this one wrong and you'll be betting the firm and your retirement every day you go to work out on a job. A lot of contractors in the restoration business don't have this straight. A lot of cleaners don't have this straight. Unlike property insurance, which is generally of good quality, liability insurance on restoration firms is generally not good. Multiple exclusions and coverage defects can leave an insurance buyer with essentially no insurance for what they do for a living. That's how bad it is in liability insurance relative to what you guys do. So we do some consulting for some of these networks. So we see hundreds of actual policies sold by hundreds of different insurance companies, by hundreds of different insurance brokers. We know that 80% of them don't work so well. Here are the most common mistakes. No environmental coverage for mold, category 3 water, lead, or asbestos. We hear this a lot. We aren't a mold contractor, so we don't need contractor's pollution liability insurance. Or we sub out all our asbestos and mold work, so we don't need to be insured. General always needs to be insured for what the subcontractors are doing. The smart general will make sure that the subcontractors have insurance and that you're an additional insured on their policy when they screw up. Coverage gaps between the insurance coverage parts caused by having separate GL and contractors' pollution liability policies and forth. It's unfortunate that stuff is called contractors' pollution liability insurance. It was invented in 1986 to insure Superfund cleanup contractors working for the Environmental Protection Agency in Washington, D.C. I was their insurance consultant. I invented contractors' pollution liability insurance. I'd never heard of a restoration contractor. I didn't pay any attention to restoration contractors until 2003, when I knew mold claims were coming and it would mess you guys up 3 years before the exclusions hit. And then I started adapting the policies that I had created for hazardous waste contractors for people running around in a kitchen with a hammer. You have to change the tools a little bit if you're going to go from a hazardous waste contractor to a restoration firm. So the CPL policies that were invented for the hazardous waste boys don't work so well for restoration guys off the shelf. You need to pay a lot more attention to your contractual obligations. I saw Jeff Cross on the elevator on the way down. He said, just tell the crowd, he's not here, I hope he gets this audio, just tell the crowd risk management doesn't matter and you don't have to pay attention to it. He's being facetious. It was just really, really a high failure rate in that contractual obligations. And then not purchasing professional liability insurance. So here's the deal with professional liability insurance. A lot of you are S500 and S520 certified, right? Seen those books? White book, not that good. What do the books say right in the front cover? Professional standards and guidelines. The word professional appears in the S500 114 times. I sat on the drafting committee. I just did a word search on the word document. I didn't go through the whole thing and count. Here's how that works. So you get a claim somewhere. For somebody to allege that you did them damage, they have to say that you are a negligent person. That meant that you failed to act or not to act as a reasonable person and you had a duty to do something for them. If you're working for them, you had a duty. To collect money from you, they have to show that you breached that duty. And a good way to do that is to say that you did not follow the industry standards that somebody who was a reasonable and prudent person would have followed. And if they're smart, they'll refer back to one of those books and they'll say, they didn't follow the professional standards. The lawyer might not have any idea what a professional standard is, but as soon as they drop the word professional into the lawsuit, then you got a claims adjuster sitting there somewhere, and they have no idea what you do for a living. They read the lawsuit, professional standards, they read the policy, and every general liability policy sold to a contractor has an endorsement that talks about we're not paying claims for professional services, including the preparation of opinions, maps, surveys, reports, and a long list of stuff. And the potential is that they read the word professional in the claim, find the professional exclusion on the GL, and guess what? Not covered. So the only way to fix that mechanically is get rid of the professional exclusion on the general liability policy, which I don't know any single insurance company in the United States that will do that, or get some professional liability insurance. No environmental insurance. Contractors, pollution liability, what is that stuff? It confuses everybody. Especially insurance agents. It turns out that there is absolutely no place in the United States for an insurance agent to learn anything about that stuff. There never was any need for it. There were about 50 hazardous waste contractors running around the United States cleaning up hazardous waste sites. There are 500,000 licensed property and casualty insurance agents in the United States. The people who were working with the hazardous waste contractors knew about CPL, and there was no reason for anybody else to know anything about it. So in the state of Florida, where you actually have to take a special exam to be an excess surplus lines broker, folks that deck. And the word environmental insurance does not appear in it anywhere, not once. That's the most sophisticated exam in the United States. So there's no place for your agent to learn about this. So what you've got on your general liability policy, and I'm thinking 14,000 restorers are running around with just a general liability policy. There's a pollution exclusion. It's the longest exclusion on the general liability policy. It's this one. Fills the whole page. Nobody understands how it works. I did $700 million worth of litigating claims. Nobody understands how that thing works. They've added a lead exclusion. They've added a separate asbestos exclusion. A silica exclusion. I still don't know what that thing's about. Fungus, mold, bacteria exclusions really screwed you guys up, except nobody told you. That's because the person who wrote the exclusion didn't know who he was going to screw up by writing the exclusion. He was just told to write the exclusion, so he did. I know that because I went and visited him to find out how he got to be so smart to write an exclusion like that. And then the bacteria exclusion blows out your Category 3 water. So I built a company based on that exclusion, and I'm still learning about this thing, sitting in your policies. That exclusion got slammed into the insurance business faster than any exclusion in the history of insurance. It went faster than terrorism exclusions. It blew through all personal lines policies, which is the homeowner's policy. It blew through all commercial lines policies. And they even excluded fungus and mold related claims on insurance agents' professional liability insurance. Why did they do that? Why did they exclude on the insurance agent's professional liability policy? The underwriters were smart enough to know that the agents would screw this up in their customer base, that their customers would end up with uninsured losses related to this, that the customers, some of them, would then go immediately bankrupt and sue their insurance agent, and the claims they were trying to blow out of homeowners' claims would end up as insurance agents' professional liability claims. They really just didn't want anything to do with it, so they blew it out of professional liability policies too. No exclusion in the history of insurance has ever gone through all three. So the way that these things work is you've got an insurance policy, it's got an insurance agreement. We'll cover you for these things. Then it's got some exclusions, and the way you actually read them is the exclusions will have some definitions. Well, the whole policy has definitions. So in the back, bodily injury, if it's in quotes or bold letters, there are words in the back, here's how bodily injury, here's what we mean about bodily injury. So it's a definition like in a dictionary. And you could actually take, here's the way you have to read it, where it starts off with bodily injury, if you really wanted to do it right, you take that definition of bodily injury from the definition section of the policy and you drop it in right where that word appears. Every place it appears, you put it in. And then your ACE sells a 100-page policy. It would be 12,000 pages long if you did that. But it's the only way to actually understand the different things. So you've got to read the definitions, and then you put them in, within the context of this sentence. So the policy is not going to cover bodily injury or property damage in whole or in part, which would not have occurred in whole or in part, but for the actual alleged or threatened inhalation, exposure to, existence of, or presence of any fungi. Anybody who's taken S520 knows that mold spores are omnipresent on the planet Earth. Why in the world would you need to exclude something that is already there? That's crazy. Presence of fungi or bacteria within a building. So this thing only applies if you're in a building. So if you're outside, it doesn't matter. And then starting at the words regardless, they took that out of a property policy. It's from a flood exclusion. Flood exclusions work perfectly. Nobody litigates the meaning of a flood exclusion. The reason the guy who drafted this put it in is he wanted an exclusion that absolutely every time worked. So regardless of whether any other cause or event contributed concurrently, that means at the same time, or in any sequence to such injury or damage. I choke every time I read the word any. Any sequence. So if fungus or bacteria gets involved in any sequence to a loss, you know, mold's going to take like 72 hours to grow, right? So you had a job and screwed it up. You thought it was dry, it's not dry. Then you got mold on the inside of the walls, and the business can't operate their business anymore. And it's got to be remediated. So you turn in a claim on the GL policy, the M word appears, does that blow out the entire claim? Would seem to be all parts of it. The stuff that was there before, you tipped over a paint bucket on the job, and now you got to sand the floors, but nothing to do with mold. But mold appeared 3 days later, any sequence, you don't have coverage for the paint bucket. Weird exclusion. The second part of this thing is if you're in the Category 3 water business, mold-related business, going to go to the O'Hare Airport and wipe it down to get rid of the MRSA bacteria, which is a janitorial job. I think this is the exclusion that says you don't have insurance for being in the business. Any loss. How come they didn't start off with bodily injury or property damage? Any loss. That's the defense coverage. Different. So these policies cover bodily injury, property damage, and defense. Even if you have a claim that may not be covered, your general liability carrier has to defend it anyhow. Unless it's got a word like this, any loss, then if it's involved with this, they're not even going to defend you. Any loss, cost, or expense arising out of, and I would go all the way down to, in any way responding to or assessing the effects of fungi or bacteria by any insured, by any other person or entity. I choked on that too. What do you mean in any way? So the scenario I come up with is a plumber goes to a house, we get a good old house, figure out if it was a backup drain, which is Category 3 water, there's a bacteria in it, right? Or a washing machine supply hose filling the basement with 2 inches of Category 1 water. But it could have been Category 3 water, you weren't sure. And on the way out, you figured out a way to burn down the house. Which has nothing to do with assessing the effects of Category 1 or Category 3 water. You just burned down the house. And you turn in a claim for burning down the house, but you were there to see if it was Category 3 water as a cover. I asked the man who wrote this, I said, I don't think there's coverage for burning down the house. He said, are you crazy? It has nothing to do with fungus or bacteria. Said, you know, everybody thinks that. But here are the words. Just happened to carry this on me. Here's the words. Show me where there's coverage for burning down the house. He was there to assess the effects. And he just smirked. It was a pretty good exclusion, don't you think? The guy who wrote it didn't know. So it's sitting in your GL policies. So the GL policy takes out any cost arising out of any way or any way responding to or assessing the effects of fungi or bacteria by the insurance. The Category 3 water loss for the cleaners here, backup sewer, it applies. Even if a separate mold, bacteria, microbial matter policy is purchased, it only pays for damages caused by those pollutants. So even if you went off and bought a contractor's pollution liability policy, and you turn that loss in for burning down the house on the house you went to see if it was Category 1 or Category 3 water, that CPL policy they're going to pay only covers pollution losses. So you end up with an unresolvable coverage gap between the GL, which excludes you being there and anything that might happen, and the pollution. Bottom line is the GL policy excludes more than a CPL policy can cover. There's no way to fix either policy independent by paying for coverage enhancement endorsements. So the way that endorsement works is you got the policy and it's pre-printed. Anything that is attached to the policy, which amends the policy, that overrides what's ever in the pre-printed policy, always. And if there's a conflict, which is what I was screwing around with this morning, you got 2 additional insured endorsements. They directly conflict on the same policy for a contractor who's going to pick off the job Friday if they don't figure this out. But still, the way it works is anything that goes to your favor as the contractor, even in a conflicting situation, favor goes to the contractor. So it's just some sloppiness on the part of the underwriter, the agent. The contractor's probably got the right coverage. Figure it out. I think the only good solution is to have the general liability and the contractor's pollution liability policy under the same policy form, and if you can't do that, you at least want them with the same insurance company. Nobody really understands how pollution exclusions work. There's not a lot of case law in contractor's pollution liability insurance. What you want to avoid is two claims adjusters, one for the GL underwriter, one for the contractor's pollution liability underwriter. Both standing there telling you, we agree this is a covered claim, but it's not my job, man. It's that other policy. You don't have enough time or money to be dealing with that. It's common to buy contractors' pollution liability policies that do not work for the restoration and cleaning business. They weren't designed for you guys. They need to be tweaked a lot. There are no design standards on CPL policies. You go out and buy a general liability policy. It's been approved by the insurance commissioner in 50 states. Guess how many insurance commissioners care about a CPL policy? Zero. Right? It's totally up to your agent to get that straight. There's actually no place for the agents to learn this stuff. In your contracts with your clients, pay attention to this real close. If there are insurance requirements in the contract, they're there for a reason. Okay? If they seem unusual, they're really there for a reason. In your business, what you don't see is you go off and work for one of these networks. The network's got a contract with an insurance company. You never see that contract. You don't know what the network said they're going to be doing for that insurance company and the contractors that work for them do for that insurance company. I guarantee you the network did not retain the risk. Anything that you screw up on a job, you're going to pay for, and if the insurance company gets sued for having you around, you're going to pay for whatever they paid. So you can structure your insurance to get that all straight. Your insurance steps in and indemnifies the insurance companies. Our worst contractor's pollution liability claim came from a plumber that sawed an access hole in a ceiling that had been covered up where the asbestos tile that was on the porch ceiling got covered up with drywall, and then they built in the porch and expanded out the upstairs to have an upstairs master suite and the bathtub leak. So to access the pipes on the bathtub, they had to cut an access hole from the bottom. It was a drying job. It was not an asbestos job. Just a plain old drying job. So the plumber goes in there with a sawzall and cuts a hole that big. What's going on downstairs? Fans and DUs. They didn't know there was asbestos tile up there. The homeowner was smart enough to get in an industrial hygienist and find asbestos fibers in the baby's clothing upstairs. The Zurich claims adjuster hadn't even gotten there before the guy bulldozed down the house. $972,000 paid on the Chubb homeowner's policy. Who had to pay Chubb? Insurance on the restoration firm. And it was a contract with pollution liability policy. Plumbers. We insure six plumbers. There's 78,000 plumbers in the United States. We insured the six that have ever called us for a contract with pollution liability policy. They are totally oblivious to this whole thing. I did an article in R&R Magazine. The most risky type of work you can do is hire a plumber that doesn't have insurance.
So basically, all plumbers are not carrying it.
Well, they can get it, they just don't.
So
you've got it. You just.
Does our insurance or our contractors cover what the plumbers do for us? Like, we send a plumber out because we have to cap off a couple lines.
Yeah. So were your insurance covered? It should. Your insurance, you're like general contractors with the restoration business. You should be insured like a general contractor to sub out a lot of stuff. There are all sorts of weird exclusions sitting in general liability policies for subcontracted work. I haven't seen any that apply specifically to contractor's pollution liability, but it's common to see exclusions or terms like this. You have insurance for the work done by your subs. As long as your subs have insurance and there's a signed contract making you an additional insured before they start work, which ain't going to happen at 2 in the morning. But just in case your subcontractor didn't do all of those things, we're not going to void out your insurance. We'll still cover you, but your deductible is now the amount of insurance the contractor should have provided you. It's a $1 million deductible thing. Okay? So the meet the insurance specs, we talked about that. Professional liability, we talked about that. Auto, separate policy. Work comp, you really can't screw that up. Excess liability, there's the slide. Always have an umbrella or an excess liability policy. It was at least $1 million. Yeah, your firm's worth at least that. It should sit over your general liability, your automobile. Automobile is a real risky line of coverage because you don't know who you're going to hit and how badly they're going to be injured. It's a real lot of variability in auto claims. And if you get the state-of-the-art ones, that excess liability policy will sit over your contractor's pollution and your professional liability insurance. Okay? You can get one. So I think the only kind of a policy that actually works for a hammer, swing, and restoration firm is you got to get one of those combined general liability, contractor's pollution, and professional policies, and then you get an excess policy above that. Auto you can get anywhere, it's hard to screw that up. And work comp can't screw up, agents can't screw that up. And you're gonna need the expertise of a restoration insurance specialist. We've got some of them in the room right there, it could be some down at the trade show. You can raise your hand. The retailer. There'll be four of us down there, but just, you know, of the 500,000 agents, most of them cannot learn this stuff. It's not their fault. So you got to find the people who have specialized in it. Look for objective credentials in your agent. If you've been buying the cheapest insurance quote that an agent brings in, I guarantee you, bet you $100, I'll find something seriously wrong in that insurance program. No way that works. Okay. Thanks for the opportunity for this presentation today. I hope you learned some stuff. We'll be down at the trade show. If you have any specific questions, I'm around for 3 days. Thanks for coming.